Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Here today to talk to you about Runaways Season 2.
Indeed, Pete, taking an opportunity to look back at the season as a whole. Let's start with highlights. What were some of the top moments of the season for you?
I don't think you could possibly start this list without the 7th episode, Last Rites. Maybe the greatest series episode yet.
Definitely, I think that's one starting point. Some other areas that for me stick out, I still continue to be really, maybe amazed isn't quite the right word, but I continue to be taking note of the care that was taken with that Nico, Tina, Robert fight, using the actors as much as possible, even if it wasn't the best fight choreography ever. That dedication to get those faces on screen in a fight, I think it paid off with an authenticity. You know, we're all so good now at spotting how things are made, or quick press pause. Look, you can't see Nico's face there because it's a stunt woman. And for them to commit to getting it on screen, I think that summarizes this season as a whole in a lot of ways, to make it as authentic as possible with the actors that you have.
Really good point. For me, another highlight, just in the way you could consume this season for the first time as it dropped, to binge it, to be able to go. And we got more episodes at that, Matt. We got 13 episodes and able to go through them as you and I did so quickly. And now here podcasting at the end, as opposed to the just 10 that we got in the first season. And, you know, the most we ever got was the first three, and we had already seen the first one. So this met the hunger, and this is a show that a lot of people talk about online.
I think, given the huge cast, which I know we've discussed many times before, but it's such a big cast and there's so many intertwining stories or subplots and things of that sort, it really has benefited from having that space to let the parents do their stuff, let the Runaways do their stuff, intersecting when necessary, adding new characters, things like that.
Absolutely. And I think, too, in terms of what we got in 13 episodes, you know, we've continued to hear with the Marvel Netflix stuff this cliche of bloat. There was not any bloat to this story they told in season 2. You can see why they expanded from 10 episodes to 13.
Yeah, I think there were some episodes, as we discussed previously on the podcast, some episodes that maybe didn't land as the best of the season, or storylines that maybe in retrospect we kind of disagree with spending so much time here or there. But they told the story that they wanted to tell, and this was definitely a 13-episode sized season, even if some of the executions were less than 100%.
The conversation I continue to have with people who are not watching this show, and I don't understand why they're not watching this show. They think it is exclusively a teen show. When I offer them this retort, this is a Marvel television show that has the best writing for teens on TV right now.
Yeah, that comes back to that authenticity. These characters really, really do sing in terms of being real kids, real people, making real decisions in a mostly real world. And of course, we have these different slices of life, despite the fact that they are Brentwood brats and affluent and things of that sort. You get the different social perspectives and whatnot, and it really does come across as this odd intersection of comic book fantasy and some honest reality.
And at the very top of that list, as far as performances, Matt, I mean, Virginia Gardner and Lyrica Okano as Carolina and Nico, do a fantastic job. It's not that the others don't, but given the relationship that they're in, the smart and really sensitive to the issue at the same time, you know, I come back to the storyline very late in the season with Nico, Carolina, and now Zavin, and you've got the love triangle when it's really not, because Carolina has no interest at this point. We can only imagine that's going to get complicated in a potential third season. As we're recording, they've not yet been renewed. And the idea of her agency with this alien who has suddenly thrown itself into her life romantically, the conversation that they have, her, Nico, and Zavin, about who's going with who and who chooses to do this. And it's about that choice as opposed to the cliches. Well, oh, all right, here are, you know, two girls in love, and, you know, a lot of other shows are going to bite into that in a hackneyed way. And this is fresh. It's a positive model that's set forth, and just really, really appreciate the performances that they put forth.
I think, too, there's kind of an honesty where I don't know if Savage and Schwartz sat down and said, we want to put at the forefront of season two, two characters that kind of typify two ends of a scale for teens. But I can't help but notice that in Carolina, you have her, of course, coming from this very traditional, quasi-traditional background. I know that the Church of Gomorrah is this kind of new age thing, but it's kind of a stand-in for some established religions, whether they're classically established or established mostly in Hollywood. But she's kind of like, hey, stick with the church. That's the parental influence there. And then Nico has these parents that are very shaped by technology and that kind of the world of future tech, if you will, not to oversell it. And both kids are kind of under pressure to be like, hey, come join us in this traditional way. Come join us in this forward-looking way. And isn't that what those teen years are about? I mean, either you're getting a lot of pressure from your parents to act like they did back in the day, or you're getting a lot of pressure from your parents to get your act together for adulthood that's ahead, or you're not getting any pressure at all, and it's kind of the after effect of, you know, do I live the way they did, or do I live differently, that kind of thing. And those are the characters that are getting the most pressure from their parents.
It's a really great point, and one I hadn't considered when you get to the parents. And that leads me to my first mark against them, and that my first low light. Even though we got more episodes, I feel like we got less of the parents. And it's not necessarily a knock, because this show is The Runaways. It's not The Pride. But I feel like the parents, properly sprinkled in as they were in the first season, you know, so much more as opposed to the second season. And then when you consider that in the second half of the second season, we didn't even really have the parents most of the time. Many of them had alien personas inside of them. And it's a story complication, and they've got to navigate it, and I get it. But I feel like we had so much more out of Angel Parker last season in Catherine. You know, what did she do this season? She killed Darius. That's about it. That's about all she did. And she wasn't one that got taken over by an alien. You know, with Tina, with Brittany Ishibashi, I mean, when she was on screen and being able to play the alien, she's the one who ate it up playing an alien. She eats it up whenever she's on screen, pun intended there, whether it's pancakes, whether it's what was it the other time she started in with the cake. Two great scenes, standout scenes, but I feel like they made her a little bit one note. All right, this alien likes to eat things. You know, I think any opportunity to get, you know, more and different takes on the parents. But again, it's a minor qualm.
I think that what you're saying, it does lead to what must be a story discussion, maybe as they start to break down season three, whenever that writing process starts or whenever it did start. Do you kill off some of these parents just to give a little story space? You know, we do have three of them now inhabited by the alien force. So you can kind of say, hey, good news, everybody. All your contracts were picked up for season three. Side note, three of you are exiting, you know, three quarters of the way through the season or whatever it is, or you're going to be playing somebody else. I think that the season long story for season two, it did struggle a bit to get all the parents in there. And as you mentioned, some of that was maybe papered over in a very, very effective way, I might add. So maybe paper over isn't the right phrase, but we had some of the actors being used to play the alien doppelganger and things of that sort, which is fine, but I don't know how you use them all next season, period. I think that there might be room for the shocking killing off partway through or whatever it might be.
Right. The massive sin, I think, in this second season, and again, it kind of has to be, the AWOL storyline was not the greatest moment of this TV show.
I think first and foremost, because look, the downside to the LAPD, I will admit, I don't know the current status of the perspective on the LAPD. I mean, think back to the OJ Simpson story from 20 years ago or farther, certainly farther back. You know, the stories of a corrupt, inept, outright wrong LAPD, those stories are well known. So if you want to go there with police corruption and things of that sort, that's fine. To do it in such a, in my mind, a heavy-handed way where he's a thug from the hood and now he's got himself out of there and he's gone to the police academy and he's gotten this and now he's part of that and this and that, the other, but he still is a thug enforcer from the hood. It kind of seemed a little lacking in nuance and, you know, lacking in nuance, period. And I think that there's a reason why that portion of the story sagged a bit. Certainly not the fault of the actor. I just think that it wasn't kind of in line with a slightly more enlightened view of the world that the show otherwise has.
Yeah, I think that the storytelling that they've done to this point has been very wise in terms of what they've chosen to expose the runaways to. I mean, here we think in the second season, they get to be out on their own. They get to be in the hostel. Okay. They get to try to solve their own problems without the resources of their parents. And then you inject this cliche. And yeah, you still have gangs the same way I'm sure there continue to be issues with the LAPD, not on the massive publicity, potentially evidence planting scale like we had with O.J. Simpson and that, you know, scandal. But to think that a gangbanger is going to infiltrate the LAPD and essentially act as a gangbanger, as a member of the LAPD, I think really stretched credulity. And like you said, the show sagged for the portion that he was there. What did it ultimately bring us? It got us the opportunity for Nico to do whatever it is, her eyes, you know, going all unusual there, like Doctor Strange, and putting them wherever. Hope we kind of get some kind of explanation in season three. I can only imagine they're ready to do that. Hopefully, AWOL didn't make it though.
Certainly. Look, Savage and Schwartz are accomplished TV writers, producers, etc. I wonder, are some of these complaints that would have been washed away if the show was given a little bit more time. Now, that said, I don't know if it actually was given less time than it needed. You know, there's many times, let's say Marvel Netflix, where, you know, a show will start filming in November and then it won't come out until the following September or something like that. So still, they might have been done filming since April, and then there's the edit or there's effects, isn't that the other. So they might have sped things up a bit, but it's not like, you know, it's not like you can't have a faster turnaround, especially for a show like this that is not that effects heavy. Certainly not kind of new effects, you know. Oh, we need to light up Molly's eyes. Well, that's a software thing you already have set to go. Get the angle right, you know, bing, bang, boom, not created from whole cloth. So I don't know. I don't know if a longer look in pre-production would have addressed some of this stuff, but certainly ultimately a successful season.
Absolutely. Want to give props to the other great episode I meant to mention in our highlights there. The Last Waltz episode, I thought, was really, really well done with Molly's quinceañera. Thought hit that right in the feels in a way that the action-packed Last Rites did not.
Well, let's return to an area that we talked about a bit in our podcast for 2013, some season three predictions. And I guess this could also be a bridge to us talking a bit about adapting from the comic to the screen. In the comics, Pete, I was so shocked to discover that the mole in the group is not Carolina, instead is Alex. And it turns out he has a comic book secret past in which he has been evil the entire time. And at least as far as I have read, which is about, it certainly is through the first 18 issues, which are now published as, I think it's called the complete edition or collected edition, something like that. But the first 18 issues, he dies towards the end there. And then in the second edition, which I think is about another 18, there are hints that he might be coming back. And as far as I've gotten, it's not Alex Wilder who comes back. But just this notion that he's the secret bad guy and truly secret. And again, could they double back on that in the comics, for future stuff I read? Sure. But there's whole months and months and months, you know, an issue a month, there's 6 months, 8 months, 10 months where he is evil. He is dead. He is gone.
Well, I think that really makes him, as we discussed in the season two finale episode, the most likely kid that could wind up as an alien.
Yeah, it's there's certainly,
it's not going to be Chase. They're not going to, you know, extract the energy from Chase. They right. know it's not going to be Carolina because she's already one of them. And I think they're going to wind up, you know, using her energy because it will replace itself. It's a self-renewing resource in the way that the humans aren't. And I think Molly is out of bounds there as the youngest one to turn into that. I think Nico's got her own struggle, unless you want to turn the thing that's going on with her eyes into alien power, which I don't think they're doing, given that Tina's seen this before and she had never seen the alien stuff. And it's not like she's suddenly breaking character to tell her husband, oh, when I was on the planet of Gaborim Prime, I saw this once in a holographic movie show.
Well, I mean, you talk about some of the character futures. I was also surprised to discover in the comics that it's kind of a vaguely similar introduction of Zavin, though Zavin is initially, it's like Pete in the same issue, and I hope I'm not spoiling stuff. I don't know if you're there yet. Do you mind, Pete, if I continue?
You're talking to spoiler Pete, son, okay? I'm regularly in on conversations with Vaughn on, you know, what's in there.
There are a couple of hints as to Carolina being attracted to women, like literally one or two. Then she, in, I believe, the same issue, and if not, it's subsequent issues, but she quickly kisses Nico, who's kind of horrified and not quite sure what's going on. Then Zavin shows up in male form, and Carolina says, I like girls. And then Zavin says, oh, for my people, gender is no big deal. And Zavin changes into a female form, not dissimilar of TV Zavin. So it's like, on the one hand, the comic is being a little kind of open-minded in terms of gender fluidity and things like that. But in my mind, completely throws away Carolina as bi, lesbian, whatever the proper thing is that suits where she's at, just in terms of, oh, she has a feeling, and somebody's kind of like, what? And then aliens come, and then Pete, she gets on the spaceship and leaves with Zavin. And as far as I've read, she's been gone like 3 or 4 issues in space.
Right. And I think we understand where, you know, what the TV show will get to tell. You know, there was a supposition with that last episode we talked about, you know, oh, the leapfrog is being sketched out. Oh, confirmed season 3. Slow down there. I mean, for my money, and having come to the TV show before I read any of the comic, for my money, the take that they've given us on TV is superior to the comics. It can't help but be, given that they had perfected the idea and the vision first and then brought it to TV, and, you know, the way they've incorporated Jonah and the other aliens and the mystery of the spaceship at the bottom of the hole and everything there, you know, the slow burn in a way that the comics don't necessarily offer that.
Well, and that's just it. The first time I ever heard the name Brian K. Vaughan, he was doing an interview, I think, for Fresh Air or something like that, which for our international listeners is a radio program on National Public Radio. Kind of like an interview type thing. And he was describing Saga, his stellar, you know, story in the stars kind of thing, and how intentionally it was something you could never adapt, including on the first page, you have the main birth, female character. What's that?
The birth.
Yeah, she's giving birth. Her bowels are voided in that process, which is not pleasant, but, you know, happens, you know. Certainly, you know, whatever, that happens, not a big deal, but it's kind of very like, I can write whatever I want, and nobody can stop me. Story in the stars. And I feel like reading the Runaways comics, there's a bit of that, obviously on a slightly smaller scale. No birth, no bowel movements, but just kind of like, you know what? Peter Parker might need an aunt to tell him what to do, but step one, what if the aunt was bad? What if all parents are bad? Step two, I'm going to have a dinosaur because, you know what? I can. And they're all going to take crazy code names because code names are dumb, but they're going to do it ironically. And Gert wants to be like Arsenic. So she's going to name the thing Old Lace because guess what? In my world, kids are really into old-fashioned movies like that.
Right.
And on and on. And it's kind of like, it's ridiculousness stacked onto ridiculousness, which is many, many comics, don't get me wrong. But yeah, there is this kind of slight air of, I got a great, you know, a great drawing partner here in Alfana, and we're going to do whatever we want, man. As opposed to the show where it's like, we need to make these characters like in the same school, even though they're not socially aligned in the first episode. We need to kind of like rein in pride just a little bit, so it's not evil thug people plus time travelers plus mystics plus, and it's just kind of like the comics overflow with, you know what, I'm gonna have the baddest team of bad guys ever that you've never heard of, and this is just streamlined and it's like an arrow.
And while I've read nowhere near as far as Matt has, really enjoy the comic, but I enjoy the TV show more. I just think, and they're apples and bowling balls. You can't really compare the two, but I think the authenticity of the teens on this show, you know, knowing young people, working with young people, and being able to see real representations of them on TV, you can see why they went after Schwartz and Savage to bring this IP to TV.
Pete, I look forward to our next Runaways podcast, which will be probably the day that they announce that it has been renewed for season 3. I can't imagine us being able to hold in our excitement.
I was worried you were going to say the day they announce season 3 comes out in a week, like the other podcast with The Punisher and what Netflix is doing to that great Marvel show.
Well, that's speaking of apples and bowling balls, you know, thus is Marvel Netflix. But Hulu Netflix, or Hulu Marvel, Hulu Netflix would be a dark future, maybe. I don't know. Certainly Hulu Marvel, though the one show, more promise, more future there. So I look forward, Pete, to the next time we can talk good Runaways news. Now, Pete, we can't wrap up without giving one more big thank you to all the people who support us on Patreon.com. They have been in our hostel all season long.
They have. Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content. And we have no end to the need of costs to cover. So you really help us to be able to do this and bring you as much content as possible.
Indeed, Pete, this content train, part of me thinks we're going to podcast maybe 10 or 20 episodes less in 2019 than we did 2018.
I don't know the way it started, man.
That's true. Now, to be fair, some of the, it's almost like, where's the line, Pete? Like, some of the Runaways episodes were recorded in 2018, but released in 2019 and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we do have, Pete, in the second half of 2019, two shows that we have yet to announce that we've given a couple clues about that we are going to be podcasting. So I don't know, but these patrons are the wind beneath our wings, particularly on days where it's like, Pete, like today, where we're going to wrap up Runaways and talk Punisher for another podcast feed at another release date. It's a wonderful rainbow mix of all these TV shows, and we couldn't do it without those patrons.
Absolutely could not.
Pete, how can people be in touch with you, though? That's the greatest gift, and that's always a freebie.
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 10,296 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/Fantastic Geek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
As mentioned before, we will be back when there's new Runaways news. Hope it's right around the corner. With that, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final season 2 word.
Get out! She was looking very good, so was I, must say, word. We hit McDonald's, pulled into the drive. We ordered 2 Big Macs and 2 large fries for Coke. She kicked the shoes off onto the floor. She said, drive fast, speed turns me.